Chapter 32. China, Writing and the Chin. Calligraphy in China. The Aryans came to India from Asia. If you were to put your finger on India on your map, then move it up to the north, you would be in Asia. And if you move your finger right on the map, you'll go into the eastern part of Asia, China. We've already learned a little bit about the farmers of ancient China and about the pictograms used by the ancient Chinese. Pictograms were picture words that looked almost exactly like the words they represented. But as Chinese writing continued to develop, pictograms looked less and less like the words they stood for. In later Chinese writing, you can often still see a picture, but the picture is harder to find. This kind of Chinese writing is called calligraphy, and the pictures are called characters. Many Chinese characters look like the words they stand for. The word for mountain has several peaks sticking up. The word for fire shows flames leaping into the air. In ancient China, calligraphy was done with a special sharp paintbrush made out of animal hairs. Calligraphers made their own brushes by tying the hairs together into a little bundle with a silk thread. Then they glued the hairs into the end of a tube made out of a tiny piece of bamboo. If the calligrapher wanted to paint very small, thin lines, he made his brush out of mouse hair, because the hairs are so little. If he wanted to paint medium, thick lines, he would use rabbit hair. And if he wanted to paint big, broad lines, he would use sheep hair or wolf hair. Painting each Chinese character took a long, long time. Can you imagine writing a whole book this way? Eventually, the Chinese people decided to find a quicker way to write books. They carved their characters into blocks of wood. First, the calligrapher would write the character on the block of wood. Then a craftsman would carve away the wood from around the character so that it stood out. Then the calligrapher would coat the raised Chinese character with ink, turn the wood block over, and press it down on a piece of paper. Now he could copy the character over and over in seconds, just by dipping the wood into ink and pressing it down. This process is called printing. With printing, books can be made quickly and cheaply. The Chinese were the first ancient people to use printing. The oldest printed book in the world is a Chinese book called the Diamond Sutra. It was printed over 1,000 years ago, but we can still read it today. Warring States. We've learned about several countries that had to be united by strong kings. King Narmer made Upper and Lower Egypt into one country. Over in Sumer, Sargon the Great united all the different fighting Sumerian cities into one country. And in India, the different cities were all independent until the Mauryan Empire united them all into one country. Exactly the same thing happened in China. China was ruled by strong warriors called warlords. Each warlord had his own separate kingdom and his own army. There were at least 6 strong warlords in ancient China, and at least 6 different Chinese kingdoms. This time in China is called the Period of the Warring States, because China wasn't one country. It was a whole handful of different countries all fighting with each other. And like Egypt, Sumer, and India, the Warring States of China all became part of one country. The warring state all the way to the east was called Qin. Its warlord, Qin Zhong, had an army with 1,000,000 men in it. The other warring states didn't like the Qin. They thought the Qin people were barbarians, uncivilized people who didn't care about reading, writing, or art. But the Qin army was the strongest army in China. The Qin conquered the other warring states one at a time until Qin Zhong ruled all of China. Qin Zhong became the first emperor of all China, and this new united country was named after Qin Zhong and his tribe. The word China comes from the word Qin. Qin Zhong knew that the conquered warlords would try to rebel against him, so he forced all the warlords and former rulers of the warring states to move into his capital city. As long as they lived near him, he could keep an eye on them and make sure they weren't planning to overthrow him. He took all their weapons away, melted them down, and turned the metal into 12 enormous statues, which he put in his own palace. He built wide, straight roads so that his soldiers could travel quickly to fight anyone who might try to rebel against him. He executed anyone who might be planning treason. And, because he was afraid that Chinese writers might encourage the Chinese people to get rid of him, he ordered thousands and thousands of books burned. Some of these books were printed, but many were written by hand. Calligraphers had spent years and years laboring over their pages. But Chin Zung didn't care. He wanted those books destroyed so that no one would get rebellious ideas from them. His prime minister even announced that anyone who discussed books in public would be executed in the marketplace. Chin Zung kept his new empire together, but he used burning, destroying, and killing to keep his power. Even though he gave his name to the country of China, many Chinese people despised him for his cruelty. The First Emperor and the Great Wall. When Chin Zung became the emperor of all China in 221 BCE, he changed his name. From now on, he would be known as Shi Huangdi. In Chinese, this name means First Emperor. Chin Zung, now called Shi Huangdi, wanted his subjects to remember his power every time they spoke his name. One day, Shi Huangdi sat on his throne thinking about his new empire. He had been careful to stamp out rebellion inside his borders. All of his enemies lived near his palace, and Shi Huangdi had sent his soldiers to guard them and to report on all their activities. He had burned the books that might encourage his people to rebel. He was safe from revolt, but his kingdom wasn't secure yet. Outside the borders of China, ferocious tribes roved through the wild mountains and plains of the north. For years, these northern barbarians had attacked the warring states trying to take over their land. They were the earliest of the tribes, which were later called Mongols. The Mongols rode swift horses and shot arrows with deadly precision. So some of the warring states had built walls to keep the Mongols out. These walls were still standing, but parts of them had crumbled away into dust, and between the walls were huge gaps. The Mongols could come through those gaps at any time, Shi Huangdi thought. They could sweep down and take over parts of my empire. How can I protect China from the Mongols? If only I could build a wall along the whole northern side of my empire. Then Shi Huangdi had an idea, a stupendous, incredible idea. Perhaps I can build a wall along China's northern border, he exclaimed. A wall thousands of miles long, a great wall. So Shi Huangdi summoned his architects and builders. All along the northern part of my empire, he told them, old walls are falling down. I want to repair these walls, and then I want to build a new wall connecting all the old walls together into one huge barrier that will keep the Mongols out of my kingdom. But, Emperor, the architect and builders protested, there is not enough stone in the far reaches of your kingdom to build a great wall. Then think of another way to do it, Shi Huangdi ordered. The builders and architects labored for weeks, trying to think of a way to build the wall in places where stone was scarce. Finally, they discovered a way. The builders made a wooden frame as high as a man's waist and as wide as a wall. They set this frame upon the ground and filled it with loose dirt. Then workers stamped and packed the earth until it was only 4 inches high and as hard as concrete. They lifted the frame up, set it on top of the packed dirt, and filled it again. They could build a dirt wall as hard as stone, 4 inches at a time. When Shi Huangdi saw the dirt wall, he was pleased. Now it is time to build, he commanded, and he ordered thousands and thousands of men out to work on the great wall. He sent peasants who had no choice but to obey. He sent his enemies and his prisoners out to work on the wall, forcing them to labor day and night. He declared that every grown man in China must work on the wall for 1 month out of the year, and he sent his armies out to guard the workers from attack as they built the wall. For years, the people of China worked to finish the wall. They built up over mountain ridges, and down into valleys. As the wall grew higher and higher, they were forced to haul dirt up to the top in small baskets. It took days and days to complete even one section of the Great Wall. When Shi Huangdi died, the wall was still unfinished. But over the next few hundred years, each Chinese emperor who came to the throne sent men to work on the wall. Guard towers were built every few miles so that watchmen on top could see the Mongols coming long before they reached the wall. Brick and rock reinforcements were added to the dirt sections. Eventually, the wall was almost 3,000 miles long, almost long enough to reach from one side of the United States to the other. Today, long stretches of the Great Wall of China still stand. Although some parts of it have collapsed, others are still strong and high enough to walk along. People come from all over the world to walk on the Great Wall of China. The First Emperor's Grave. Almost 30 years ago, two men were digging a well. They were farmers who lived near the city of Xi'an, in the middle of China. The morning was hot, the sun beat down, and the two men were sweating and thirsty. "Let's stop for a drink," one of the farmers said to his friend. "Oh, let's just dig a little longer," his friend answered. "We're bound to hit water soon." So they kept digging. The ground was hard, and the dirt they turned up was red and rocky. Soon their shovels began to turn up pieces of broken pottery. "Someone broke a pot here," the first farmer said. "Those pieces are too big for a pot," his friend said. "And look, that piece looks like an arm." The two friends kept digging. They found broken arms and legs made out of clay, and even a head wearing a helmet. Soon, word of their discoveries spread to the city of Xi'an. Archaeologists living in the city hurried out to see what the farmers had found. They began to dig deeper and deeper. They found a huge underground pit filled with 3,000 soldiers made out of clay baked hard. The soldiers were life-size, and buried along with the soldiers were sharp, shining weapons, full-sized horses, also made out of clay, and wooden war chariots. The horses wore clay saddles and harnesses made from gold and bronze. As the archaeologists uncovered each soldier, they saw that every single face was different, molded to look like a real person. No two soldiers were the same, and all the soldiers were facing east, as though they were guarding something behind them. What were they guarding? They were guarding the tomb of Shi Huangdi. You see, the first emperor of China wanted to live forever. He spent the last part of his life looking for the water of eternal life, a legendary drink that would keep him from dying. He made 5 different trips into the mountains of China looking for this water, but he never found it. And when he knew that his death was near, he ordered a great underground city, more than 9 miles wide, built for his tomb. He hoped that his body would stay forever in this city. Shi Huangdi ordered his crown, robe, and royal bed placed in one of the chambers. He commanded his servants to enter the chamber every day, even after his death, to make the bed and bring water and food, just as though he were still alive. So far, archaeologists have found 3 pits filled with clay soldiers. At the center of the underground city, a huge burial mound rises up above the ground. Underneath this burial mound, archaeologists hope to find the body of Shi Huangdi itself. But the mound still hasn't been excavated. Ancient Chinese writers, describing Shi Huangdi's underground city, tell us that the tomb itself is far, far below the mound, almost 100 feet below the surface of the ground. The tomb is made of stone, covered with melted copper to keep the water out. What is inside the burial mound? We don't know for sure. But shortly after the death of Shi Huangdi, an ancient Chinese historian described the burial chamber like this. rare treasures and jewels removed from various palaces, towers, and halls filled the grave. Craftsmen were ordered to set arrows on crossbows, which would shoot automatically at anyone breaking in. Rivers and seas in miniature were dug and filled with mercury made to flow by mechanical devices. On the ceiling, stars and planets were set. Candles were lighted, burning fish fat so that they might keep the grave chambers lit for a long time. Does the burial mound really contain all of these wonders? Well, archaeologists have already discovered that the ground around the mound contains mercury, a silver metal that flows like water. This mercury must have come from inside the mound. One day, archaeologists will open the mound and look inside. Let's hope that they watch out for those automatic crossbows. Note to parent. The period of the Warring States began around 500 BCE. Xinzong's forced unification began around 230 BCE. The first united Chinese empire dates from 221 BCE. The burning of the books took place in 212 BCE. Construction of the Great Wall of China began in 214 BCE and continued for several centuries.